Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So we have one more week of transfers. We had, I have to say, a really fun weekend of Serie A action. So we're going to cover both on today's podcast. We'll talk about transfers a little bit at the top, name our winners and losers from Serie A weekend, do a few more hot transfer topics. We, of course, have a section of the podcast for our patrons, and an excellent interview on Inter with Fulvio Santucci came out really well. I think you'll really enjoy it. That's available to all at the end. But before we get to all that, I am joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, there's a little less than a week left in transfers. There are some players that I think we can safely say are staying in Serie A. One of them is Koulibaly. And, you know, Man City went for other targets at center back. And the big storyline that I saw is I got a lot of tweets, a lot of things from Premier League fans, you know, basically saying, I'm so glad PSG and Man City didn't cave in to Napoli. They were so greedy. How could they demand so much money for a 29-year-old player during COVID? And now, if you remember, at the beginning of the transfer window, or even at the end of last season, sporting director at Napoli, Giuntoli, had said that Koulibaly was like a vintage car, that his value never goes down. And we know De Laurentiis always said, you know, I have a price in mind, you want to pay it, he can go. If not, he's staying. So what do you think about that, Alex? Do you think this is greedy, per se? Should Napoli be admired to be in a position where they can do it? What's your take on something like that?
No, David. I mean, I honestly don't think it's greedy. I mean, first of all, I think the first thing people need to remember, especially in this window, is that COVID might not have had the exact impact on the transfer window that everybody predicted, but it certainly has impacted many teams in this transfer window. And I think it's one of those windows, it's one of those times where you can't actually call any team greedy or unreasonable or stubborn or whatever their stance is on a player. I just don't think now's the time where, and I'm not even trying to play to the ultra sensitive crowd of, oh, no, COVID, so everybody's in the right, no one's in the wrong, you know, be respectful of everyone's situation. I mean, sure, obviously, but I just more mean that this is a really important time for some teams. And by the way, I mean, specifically on Napoli and Koulibaly, like, that's a player that has been important to them for a long time. And I'm sure for a while they've always thought, well, if we do let go of him, we better be getting a nice financial return. So it's a little bit bad luck that maybe the point in his career of his play and his age is now hitting a point where, all right, yeah, maybe we will sell him, but that same point is during this COVID market. But they're still well within their right, in my opinion, to keep a high price for him. And if no one wants to pay it, then they keep him. And yeah, you mentioned the fact that he's 29. So that's kind of like me pointing out, yeah, it's bad timing, but still, I think that if they want to hold on to him to a certain price, I mean, they should. Now, they're the ones in the long run, David, who might look back on this with, famously, hindsight is always 20/20, and say, maybe we should have just taken that offer that was a bit lower, because there is such thing as holding on to a player too long. David, I always talk about the quote that Bill Belichick has. It's better to get rid of a player a year too early than a year too late. But specifically here about COVID impacting it, if I'm Napoli, I would think to myself, don't let COVID impact it. Still demand the same price for Koulibaly. Because, by the way, you are seeing teams still spend plenty of money. Not as much money as I think some media outlets like to make it seem. But, I can't throw any second-guessing or any greedy claims at Napoli. That's like a prize asset that I think they've been for a while hoping that when they do let go of, they get a nice financial return. And if they're disappointed that they wouldn't get it now and now might be the time, well, it's a tough decision, but I think whatever way they lean, you know, it would be hard to second guess, in my opinion, from the public, unless you're just an authentic Napoli fan and you're one of those fans who wants to make moves for the club. But I wouldn't throw the greedy tag out. David, what do you make of the whole situation? And do you think Napoli, you know, I say hindsight is 20/20. Do you think it will get to the point where Napoli will regret not selling Koulibaly?
Yeah, look, it's a very interesting situation. So let's start with a little bit of history on Napoli, because I think it's really impressive that they are in a position to even do this and say, you know what, this is the price. If nobody's going to pay it, we'll just keep them. I mean, this is a club that was bankrupt in the 2000s. De Laurentiis took it over, I think, 2006, 2007. They were in the fourth division. They never had huge revenues to begin with, but De Laurentiis, you know, love, hate him, whatever. You can't say that he didn't do a good job financially building up Napoli. They are in a very strong financial situation. They hardly ever run any debts. I don't think they have any debt at all. They turn a profit almost every year. So with Koulibaly, they signed him. They didn't spend a lot to sign him a while ago. Kudos to Benitez. He's the one that kind of discovered him. Koulibaly fell in love with the city. I know there was a lot of racism problems. The city really embraced him, and I think that was a big part of why he feels such a strong bond to the city. He loves it there. I think he would have considered the offer from the right clubs. I think Man City and PSG, he probably would have considered, would have been a step up in his career. But they didn't meet Napoli's price. And, you know, it's interesting because Napoli are also with Milik. They are in danger of losing him for free. But despite all that, they're still in a position to, even after the Milik deal collapsed, to still say, no, we're not going to sell Koulibaly at a cheaper price. And this is after they had already broken their own transfer record for Osimhen. And I remember all the tweets of people saying that they were spending the Koulibaly money on him, and they didn't. So let's start with the fact, kudos to Napoli to be in this position to say no to Man City, you know, a team with really huge resources. So, you know, if you're like the little guy instead of the super rich corporations and whatnot, you know, maybe you can have some sympathy for Napoli here. So as far as are they going to regret it or not, I think, you know, we don't want to overreact to the first two games of the season. Napoli had a pretty soft schedule, but they certainly look good. Osimhen looks like he was a great addition. There doesn't seem to be that dark cloud hanging over the team like last season. So look, could Napoli be a dark horse contender for the Scudetto? Possibly. And you have to ask yourself, are Napoli better off with Koulibaly this season than if they had sold him? And let's say they bring in Socrates and then they bring in Boga and Vertu. Let's say, because that seemed to have been the ideal scenario for how Napoli was going to spend the money for Koulibaly. Does that make them better than having Koulibaly, who has off to a good start to the season, who I think, and with De Vrij, is still in the conversation for the best defender in Serie A? I think you can make a case they are better off this season, and at least Napoli doesn't have a huge amortized value to protect with Koulibaly. I would imagine he barely has any. He's under contract this season and two more. They are in no rush. He never really wanted to push to leave. So I don't think it's greedy. I think Napoli just said, you know what, all things considered, this is the price where it's worthwhile to get rid of our franchise defender. As of now, that price didn't happen. Doesn't sound like it will. And he stays. So I have to say, as a Serie A fan, I'm pretty excited. And Alex, it looks like we'll get to do another, maybe two transfer windows talking about Koulibaly linked to teams outside of Serie A.
Yeah, that's the thing, is he's just turning into one of our guys here. I mean, my God, it's honestly probably going to be underwhelming, David, the day he does move. So
yeah, without a doubt.
Let's see. All right. So, David, how about this here at the top segment? Any other players you are surprised that have actually stayed in Serie A this window?
Yeah, you know, if you really wanted to find the silver lining for COVID, because it's been terrible, and in Italy, we'll get to it, in winners and losers, there's a lot going on with COVID. If you wanted to find the positive, is that, you know, it made the financial situation on the transfer market very different, and it certainly contributed to some players staying that probably would have left. I think Lautaro Martinez is probably the easiest example, although Barcelona really seem in a tough spot financially, but maybe without COVID, they would have been able to pay the exit clause. So we still have Lautaro. And Serie A, another player that we've been talking about since our first episode is Milinkovic-Savic. There really never was any buzz on him potentially leaving in a world without COVID. Let's say Lazio finished the season really strong. Lazio maybe even win the Scudetto. Who knows? Maybe Milinkovic-Savic does leave. He did say he wanted to play the Champions League with Lazio, but who knows? It could have gone the other way as well. I think Dybala, Juve, as good as he was last season, he always was a player they could make a big plus valenza on, someone who doesn't have a completely defined role. So there really was never any buzz on Dybala leaving. And the other thing, I definitely think it had an impact on the Bosman signings, and more the players with high salaries become much less appealing on the market. I think Juve would have been able to move one between Ramsey and Rabiot without COVID. We saw Inter give up on Godin after one season because of his high salary. Maybe without it, they're able to keep him and bring in Vidal. So I think overall, in this sense, we can say COVID helped a little bit Serie A, because we have a lot of stars that stayed that otherwise would have left.
Okay. All right, David. Well, I'm still gassed that this segment is back, because my God, it's so good to have all these leagues back and playing again, which means we have some winners and losers to do. So let's start off on the positive. Who are our winners?
So I have to say, I really enjoyed this weekend in Serie A. It was a lot of fun. I have to say, it almost felt like normal life was back, but then we heard some news on positive tests that are concerning. But there was some great action on the pitch. We had Atalanta making their season debut, put up a lot of goals against Torino. Papu Gomez was fantastic. We had Hadebor, who I don't think had scored last season at all. He was pretty good, scored, could have easily scored another. Duran in the midfield was excellent. Atalanta definitely looked like they didn't skip a beat. Then we had Lazio making their debut. They win against Cagliari. I thought that was an impressive match because Cagliari is getting a lot of rightful buzz. We had Lazzari score the first goal of the season. Immobile had scored in their first previous three season openers, was the first person to score. Lazzari ends that streak. Also, positive game for Marusic, who did not have a good season last year. They need him to bounce back at wing back. Also want to give a shout out to Cagliari keeper Cragno, Calcio Land favorite, had another excellent game. Cragno, to me, is really an elite keeper in Serie A. He could really start for pretty much any team, in my opinion. That's how good he is. Then we had Benevento returning to Serie A. They win with Caldirola scoring two goals. Kudos to the Pippo Inzaghi and his return to Serie A. Then we had Fiorentina's game at Inter. Really a great game on Saturday night. Inter's defense, definitely pretty shaky, but man, Ribéry put on a show. What an assist to Chiesa. I also want to highlight that Chiesa is off to a strong start to the season at wing back. On Inter's side of things, Lautaro played well. Definitely looks like he's back to his old self. Sanchez, really, really good. Inter's bench, incredibly impressive. I think just the sight of seeing Nainggolan and Vidal come on together at the same time, that was really exciting. Granted, it would have been nicer if it was 3-4 years ago, but still pretty, says a lot to see those two coming on together. Then we had my team Sassuolo, early match on Sunday, put on a show against Benevento. Juricic, one of the underrated unsung heroes up front, played well. We had Ciccio Caputo, who had a hat trick of goals called back, disallowed, but he also, he's really been excellent. Ciccio Caputo, definitely a player to watch this season. Then we had Napoli trouncing Genoa 6-0. Lozano off to a very good start to the season, his first brace in Serie A. He didn't score, but Osimhen's been really excellent, opening up space for Napoli's front line. He looks to have been really an inspired signing for Napoli. Then we had Milan, who win without Ibrahimovic. Rebic gets hurt. A good win against Crotone on a away match. Tonali, in his first start, I thought, played really quite well. Brahim Diaz scored, continues to do well. And Frank Kessie, who was very good in the second half of last season with another strong performance, encouraging for Milan's midfield. And then I told you guys that there was way, way too much negativity around Verona because of the three players they lost. They still have a lot of talent. They beat Udinese at home. They have 6 points. Granted, they got that gift from Roma with the list issue. I'm going to be really bold, and I'm going to say it right now. I think Verona is going to have more points than Fiorentina. Last season, I predicted Sassuolo was going to have more points than Fiorentina. I'm going to go super bold this year with Verona. Really solid team. I believe in them. Tamese, who was at Atalanta last season, been playing well for them in the midfield. Barak, a favorite from our patron Jesse, another strong game. And Favilli scored his first goal in Serie A. And then we had that good game between Roma and Juve. I thought Kumbula was really good in his debut. Veretout, really, really good game. Also became one of the best penalty kickers in Serie A. On Juve's side, Szczesny played well against his former club. And Ronaldo, head and shoulders, best player on Juve. In a way, it was a little reminiscent of that last Lyon game where it felt like Ronaldo was really the only one playing super hard and the other guys were watching him. So you got to give a lot of credit to Ronaldo. Also had a nice goal off a header. So I was really impressed with him in that match.
All right. Well, congrats to those guys, seriously. And for the next group, no comment. David, who are the losers?
Yeah, so we had a Torino getting torched by Atalanta. They brought in a ton of players that already are familiar with Giampaolo's system, most of them that he had at Sampdoria, including Murru, who got absolutely torched. Sampdoria have now lost their first two matches of the season. Definitely a reason for concern there. I think they're going to be pretty active in the final stages of the window. They also had signed Kitabalde, who unfortunately tested positive for COVID. We'll get into it more with a Fulvio Santucci, but Eriksen and Brozovic together does not look like a combo that works. In that game, Fiorentina-Inter, we also had Vlahovic, who had two huge misses. Defender Ceccherini was a big liability as well. And Genoa not only gave up 6 goals to Napoli, but they had 11 players testing positive for COVID. Big, big reason for concern. We had saw Ibra test positive last week. A lot of positive tests, but 11 on a team, really, really concerning. Let's see what happens. Look, it's been great to have Calcio back. It felt a little bit normal this weekend, but when you get news like that, definitely reason for concern for the season. And then the last loser is Rabiot, who had really a dumb red card in the match against Roma. Overall, Rabiot has been really good this year since dating back to last season. I think he's established himself as a clear starter at Juve, but definitely not great that he got that red card. McKinney, for all the great rightful praise he got in the first match, this match it was welcome to Serie A. Not so easy there, but Rabiot is really the one who deserves to be named a loser for Juve. So now before we get to our patrons and then for everyone, the interview with Fulvio Santucci, Alex, let's do a few quick hot transfer topics. Like I mentioned, we're recording this Tuesday morning. We have until Monday night for transfers.
I just want to say, you know, if Juve's midfield was underwhelming, maybe Jorginho's closer to Arsenal or PSG now. But hey, if you want him, come on. Come on, I saw it. I'm high on McKinney. That wasn't a great game. Rabiot, I've never been a huge fan, so Jorginho, come and get him. All right, David, let's start with
this. If you guys only knew how many times Alex texts me on this, it's fantastic. Well played, Alex.
The world will eventually know my agenda. All right, so let's start with hot transfer topics here. Who is more likely to head to the Premier League between Belotti and Milik?
Yeah, so both have been linked to the Premier League. Belotti, the Spurs. I think Spurs are more focused on Skriniar right now. They're not going to be able to pay for both, that's for sure. Torino really needs Belotti to avoid relegation. They are in big trouble. For a while, I loved the romantic thing of Belotti staying at Torino, but now I have to agree with a lot of the people that he has to move on to take the next step in his career. But, you know, he's actually coming up on the records for goals scored at Torino. He matched Valentino Mazzola, very, very famous player from the 40s. So I think he'll stay this season, but I think he absolutely needs to move on after that. Milik, on the other hand, Everton, and they lucked out with Allan, worked out. So maybe Ancelotti will be reunited with another of his former players. So Milik could be heading to Everton. There's not a huge concrete interest, but let's see what happens. Giuntoli, Napoli sporting director, did say he believes there will be a positive conclusion for Milik before the window closes.
All right. David, are Lazio going to make some last-minute signings before the end of the deadline here?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of frustrations from Lazio fans that they were expecting more this window, and for good reason. They did improve their depth overall, but they are going to bring in Andres Pereira from Manchester United on loan with option to buy. Now, granted, the option to buy at $27 million is a pretty high amount, but they are getting Man United to pay part of his wages. So kudos to Lotito negotiating that. Alex, you think Andres Pereira can do anything for Lazio? You think this is a pretty decent signing?
I mean, he never bothered me, really, when we played United. But that doesn't mean a whole lot. I think I probably was down on the whole Smalling thing, and then he was a huge success for Roma. So at this point, I'm not too high on it for Lazio, but he could turn out to be a nice little signing. Yeah, sure. David, let's switch teams here. What can we expect from Milan in the last week?
They're going to be very busy. So literally, as we're recording, I saw Gianluca tweeted that Paqueta is heading to Lyon on a permanent deal. Great news for Milan. They needed to monetize on him. I'm assuming they're not losing on his amortized value, needed to shed his salary. So they were waiting for that to happen to make one more big move on defense. That's really where they're targeting it. Their new target is Tomiyasu from Bologna. I would love this signing for Milan. This checks all the boxes, can play at right back, can play at center back, was excellent last season at Bologna. Also, marketing is a Japanese player. You can do something marketing-wise. I love that potential move for Milan. They are also linked to Schalke's Nastasic and Fofana from Saint-Étienne, but I think he'd be too expensive for Milan. Let's see if they can get Tomiyasu. This would be a great window for Milan if they can get him over the finish line. And they are also getting that winger from Bodø/Glimt, Haje, who they saw in the Europa League. So kudos to them for acting quickly. I think this has been an outstanding window for Milan. You get Tomiyasu. Really, really excellent. Great job, Maldini, so far.
All right, David, last one of this segment. Any other last-minute moves that we should keep an eye on for this deadline?
Yeah, I think it will be fairly busy. So Milan will be very active. Fiorentina are trying to reunite Piontek, bring him back from the Bundesliga. Him and Kwame were excellent together at Genoa. I like that move. Let's see if there's more on Skriniar to Spurs. West Ham are linked to Maximovic. Maybe Napoli consider selling him by keeping Koulibaly. I thought Maximovic was going to be a starter with Manolas if Koulibaly left. Maximovic played well last season. I'd be an intriguing signing for West Ham. Alex, we have all your Chelsea players that could be moving. We have Rudiger, Marcos Alonso, Emerson, of course, Jorginho. Let's see if any of them end up back in Serie A. I'm going to say at least one of them does. Borja Mayoral linked to Roma. Then, of course, we have Chiesa. Comiso left the door wide open to him leaving before the window closes. Let's see if Juve can get that over the finish line. Also, an underrated move that I really like. Cagliari's had a great window. They are linked to Sabelli, which is an intriguing right back at Brescia. Cagliari, another team that's had a great window. So before we get to Fulvio Santucci for everyone, we are going to do a section for the patrons. We answer all their questions. We have a bunch of bonus content for them. excellent articles. We did the transfer rumor raiders on Patreon this year, extra interview segments, and again, much longer versions of the podcast. So if you like Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. We use the money on Patreon to cover production costs, pay the freelance writers, and make a nice monthly donation to a great nonprofit, Insuperabili in Italy, who run camps for kids with disabilities to learn how to play calcio. Really some great stuff. Okay, I'm very excited to welcome for the second time a new friend of the show, Fulvio Santucci. We had him on at the end of August. It was really great to chat about Inter with him. Obviously, the first game is in the books yesterday. We have another week of transfers, and there's a lot going on with Inter. So I'm thrilled to chat about this with Fulvio. So my dear friend, bentornato to Calcioland. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, David. Hello to everyone. Always a pleasure to be here.
Okay, so let's start here. The game against Fiorentina was definitely a pretty pazza Inter affair. And I want to start, we're going to talk a lot about what's going on with the team, but I want to start with the defense. And my good friend, Andrew Barker, who's been on the show a lot, he's a big Inter fan. He tweeted that, you know, Inter improved in every area on the pitch this summer, but they decided with the defense, which was the best in Serie A for the first match, to have two converted fullbacks at a center back. So yesterday, I mean, on Saturday was a little bit shaky defense-wise. So let me ask you, Fulvio, especially with the uncertainty with Skriniar, how concerned are you with Inter's defense?
Well, to be honest, David, I'm not so concerned about the defense. And I think that the problems of Inter shown against Fiorentina sits now on the defensive phase. So, I mean, not only the defender, but the defensive phase. You don't get so many counter-attack, even with a starting defense, even with the best defense. And so the problem is it's a little bit ahead than defense. So I'm not concerned about that. Inter managed to keep the best defenders of last year, and I'm talking about Di Frey and Bastoni, while the third place was always switched from Skriniar to Godin, then D'Ambrosio, then again Godin.
Yeah.
So it was difficult to find a balance last year, and what I saw, what I witnessed into the Fiorentina's game was not so different from what I witnessed in early July, end of June, about what's going on in Inter. When the goal that Inter conceded to Castrovilli Saturday night was not so different by the goal that Inter conceded at Caputo's Sassuolo on the early July, or Musa Barros Bologna on early July as well. So I think that it's that some kind of things that are keep going on with that, and the problem is not sitting in the defense, if you ask me. I think more ahead of the defense. So probably what Inter really takes, and what Inter really takes right now, is a defensive midfielder, a really defensive midfielder, because nobody in the field are able to go ahead with the role of the defensive midfielder all along the game. And Inter was suffered, I would say, a lack of balance, as Conte said. That's why I'm not so concerned about the defense. I think that Inter can manage to do good things in the defense as well. Mm-hmm. Right now, even this year, but need to rethink about the balance of the squad into the pitch.
And yeah, we're going to get to the midfield in a second, because I think I know what you mean about that balance there. And I'm with you with De Vrij and Bastoni together. That's as good a duo as I would say there is in Serie A right now. So I'm with you. Not too much concern, I would say, there. But let's talk a little bit about Skriniar, who, as we're recording, they're in talks with Spurs about going. I'm not sure how realistic it is for him to leave, but let's see what happens. But I want to ask you this, because from where I'm sitting, Inter really has to go all in this year to win a title. I think last time you were on, you said it's really important that they have something to show for it, because especially if Skriniar were to leave, Inter has also been linked to a lot of top prospects. They had Zaniolo. They, of course, were linked to Tonali, Kulusevski, Kumbula, and they were all on other teams. So let me ask you, would the idea of losing Skriniar be more painful than losing out on these players because he was your own player? And how do you see Inter kind of balancing long-term goals with trying to win right away?
Well, it's actually a difficult question and requires a complex answer. So sorry in advance about that, but the answer is not complex because there are a lot of components involved into this deal. Let's start with saying that Skriniar is one of the most loved players by the supporters.
Yeah.
And this plays obviously a part into the perception of this deal. But apart from that, coming on the money thing, if this is realistic, I think, personally think, that Inter should totally go with that. And I think so because you are in a situation right now in which you don't have money around the market. So that means that if you really manage to receive some fresh money with only one deal, you could have a lot of choices, even though the time is running out right now. But you can have a lot of choices when you come to the market going to enter some player, you know, going to put in some player, bring in some player. So I would be agree with this Skriniar deal, of course, if it's realistic, if this is the sacrifice needed to financing the defensive midfielder, because I'm pretty sure right now, and I had a suspect days ago, but after the Fiorentina game, I'm pretty sure that there's no way, there's no way to insert Eriksen into this team unless you don't play with Eriksen and a defensive midfielder. You know, the name of Kanté is on the mouth of everyone, but it's not about Kanté. Kanté is the perfect prototype of this kind of player that Inter needs, but it's not the only one. So if Inter is able to manage a defensive midfielder with the amount, with what is going in with the Skriniar deal, I agree with that. Of course, that means that since the mercato is going to end in 2 weeks, Inter should have already the deal very ahead into this test for a defensive midfielder, and it's just a matter of money. But once again, in the situation in which everyone struggles to get the money, you see Juventus as well, practically big problems, but there's no way to solve it. There's no key to solve it because mercato is not going on for them as well. And in this kind of situation, Inter could make great deals for now or along in January, because January is here practically, and you have a winter transfer session that is not going to be financed by anyone. Once again, will be another struggling mercato as well. So this kind of money could solve some problem into the squad. Of course, you should have clear ideas and you should move very fast in order to do that. But if this would be possible, I would agree to finalize the Skriniar deal.
Okay. Yeah, you're probably in the minority, but I definitely see your logic there for sure. So I have to say one thing that was really impressive on Saturday was seeing the players that were coming off the bench for Inter. I remember that first Inter-Juve at San Siro last year and how the game changed once Sensi came out and once Juve put in their replacements. And it looks like Inter is going to have a much better bench next season. So we saw Nainggolan and Vidal come in together. We had also Perisic starting the match. So let's look at Nainggolan and Perisic, who last year Conte and Marotta made a point of having them leave the team. Assuming they both stay, who do you think is going to have a bigger impact between Nainggolan and Perisic?
Well, that's a very good question, I would say. We're talking about two former outcasts that now are part of the team, especially Perisic, used to be part of the team. If Inter managed to get the both of them staying, I would say that Perisic could have the better impact. Because, you know, Perisic is practically going into the footsteps of Biragi on that position. hence, you know, said between you and me, it's not so difficult to improve what Biraghi did last year. So I think that Perisic could be a great option also for the attack and for the defense as well. Of course, that's something to be fixed there, because if you manage to let Perisic and Kolarov play on the same field, sorry, on the same side, and you have Chiesa against you, so a very fast player, very quick player, also in defense, both in defense and attack, could be some kind of problem. But this could be fixable. Either way, I don't know. I think that Wijnaldum could be not so much. That could not have so much room in this squad, especially because Vidal already showed that could leave a mark here, at least for this year. So I would go for Perisic.
Okay, that's a good pick for sure. I'm very intrigued to see what he does here. So you've been talking a little bit about this, and this is, I think, one of the most important things that Inter needs to figure out is Eriksen and Brozovic. So I remember a while back when Eriksen first arrived at Inter, my friend Alex Brozio from Gazzetta, he was on, and he said in his mind the only role Eriksen could really play at Inter was kind of the Brozovic role, more in front of the defense. That was really the only way it was going to work out. Do you agree that Brozovic and Eriksen are essentially not compatible together at Inter?
Completely. I completely agree with that. And there's some sort of evidence about that. Because, you know, it's something that you cannot sort differently. Because Brozovic and Eriksen basically suffer each other. When Brozovic is able to begin the action, at that point, he could enter good into a game, but that means that Eriksen left out completely excluded from that game. And this is what we witnessed in the second half with Fiorentina, when Inter came back on the field and Brozovic practically go like 10 or 15 meters ahead in the field and practically rule out Eriksen completely for the game. On the other side, when you have Eriksen on the field, you have a player that is not so keen on defense, at least not yet. Let's see how we go with that. But you also have Brozovic that really struggle to cover what Eriksen is not doing into the defense. So yes, my best guess right now, and probably was a suspect now, something that I'm pretty sure of, I'm pretty convinced of, is that the Chileans cannot be lined up together. Because for some way, I'm not saying that the same kind of player, but I'm saying that, the light of Eriksen shade Brozovic and the light of Brozovic shade Eriksen. It's something that you cannot sort off. And I think that Inter, in order to get Eriksen in, should completely change the shape of the midfielder with that piece, the defensive midfielder. But in the other way, we should also add to the equation Stefano Sensi, because Stefano Sensi is a player that could replace Eriksen, do better, because he proved to do that, do better, and have also the possibility, also the chance to play with Brozovic. So it's not going well for Eriksen right now.
Yeah,
what we're seeing.
Absolutely. So now let's talk a little bit about Lukaku, but really more the backup position. I expect a huge season from Lukaku. I thought he was sensational last year. I know he's going to have that Europa League's weighing heavily on him, but he's obviously a great player for Inter. Does it concern you that they don't have a natural backup for? And obviously Sanchez has been really good, and he was great Saturday. You have Lautaro, but Inter was looking for someone to be his backup, and I think with COVID it's not realistic to have a backup with a huge salary, say someone like Dzeko or Giroud. But does it concern you that if Lukaku were to be out or needs to rest, Inter essentially has to change a little bit what their system is when he's playing?
Once again, not so much, I would say, because I'm not so much convinced that you need to have two players, two strikers lined up, and you need to have two backups exactly that looks like the lined up striker. I mean, in other words, you don't need that a replacement for Lukaku should be exactly the same player as Lukaku, because that could give you some kind of boring repetitivity into the attack that you made. I don't know. I think that Inter should go with a different striker from Lautaro Lukaku, probably the halfway of the two strikers, but not so much similar to Lukaku. Of course, now we are into a situation in which a lot of deals are off the table for the reason that you said. The last rumor that I heard was the Gervinho. And Gervinho is a completely different story, because Gervinho can help you with the
counterattack speed. But, yeah,
not so much. I mean, with the speed, but not so much else. And that could work, actually. That could work, because when you have Lukaku, Lautaro, and Sanchez, you have two great players. You have practically three players that are fighting for two places. And the fourth one could be just one that is not kind of like these three players. So Gervinho is a good option, better than Pinamonti, because Pinamonti is not ready. Yeah. Pinamonti, in order to get ready, needs to play more and more and more and more. The answer is I'm not convinced that we need to go black and white here, and we need to go, yeah, you have Lukaku, so you must have a backup that is the same striker as Lukaku. I think that we should think differently here, a little bit out of the box. And Gervinho is not my favorite, of course, but it's a good example of how you can have a fourth striker with skills that are not into the suitcase of the other three.
Okay, well said. So now let's talk about Hakimi, who made an impact off the bench. He had an assist to Lukaku. I have a feeling we'll be seeing a lot of that this season. I'd say Hakimi probably as exciting as a new addition in Serie A this summer. And I have to say, last year, Barella, I thought, was really sensational. I mean, Lukaku was great. Barella was right there with him. They obviously play very different positions, but they are young players arriving, bringing a dynamic aspect that maybe Inter lacked before. So if you had to guess, do you think Hakimi is going to match the production that you got from Barella last season? Or do you think, since he has to adapt to Serie A, it might not be quite as great?
Well, I think that for starting, I think that the stories are too different, because Barella came from a club, from Cagliari, that was a mid-table club, without any real experience, even in the national team. It was not a regular into the national team back in the day. So it was a sort of a bet, right? A very expensive bet, to be honest. And the guy has potential, but you should see how he should adapt, not at Inter, but probably in a big team, and play games like Champions League, and increase the level all of a sudden. And in some way, he managed to do that very well. Well, Hakimi is a different story. Hakimi came with a reputation of one of the best right sides in the world. Even though he's 22, I think that at Borussia Dortmund showed a lot. And it was a really early bird, even in the national team, Morocco. I remember that. And I remind that he played for Morocco into the World Cup 2018. For Hakimi, the expectations are higher, but I think the guy will repay this trust, because we already see that he has practically only one ball that could convert into something good. And with that only one ball, he made the perfect play. So he's a guy that is ready to play at this level. He's a guy that is ready to fill that that place. It's not a bet. I mean, I think it's some sort of guarantee right now. Or at least that's what I expect. And I would be very surprised if Hakimi failed this season in Inter.
Absolutely. So I've been wanting to ask you this question because I'm very curious to get your take on it. I saw you were tweeting quite a bit. You were concerned that Juve was going to get Zeko. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted you back on the podcast, because you really get calcio. So Zeko, definitely not the flashiest striker. And I saw Biazin also covers Inter, put it perfectly. He goes Suarez, scores more goal, probably a better player. But Zeko makes all of his teammates better. So as a big Inter fan, how relieved are you that Zeko is not at Juve and they brought in Morata instead?
I am relieved. I am relieved, David, to be honest. I am relieved because Dzeko is probably not the striker that all the football supporters, even the occasional supporters, think a lot, because he's not so familiar with scored goals. He missed chances. We also witnessed that in the game Roma versus Juventus. He really gets to play everyone around better. And, of course, Juventus is in no need to find the goals because have Cristiano Ronaldo, right? So it needs someone that is going to let the midfield and the attack communicate correctly. And Dzeko was the perfect player to do that. And, of course, when I saw the deal on, I thought that that was one of the smartest moves Juventus made in 2 years. Luckily it's not happening, and I think that as Inter fans you should believe that, because Dzeko is not the guy who would solve your problems into the attack, but Juventus has not problem into the attack. Juventus has problem with this half and half situation that is an heritage by Sarri that are not completely solved, like the position of Cristiano Ronaldo, or like a midfield that misses Pjanic right now and have not a perfect communication. Midfield attack is difficult. Dzeko could just link all the players together. So in my view, probably wrong, of course, but in my view, Dzeko would be for this year the solution for the problem that left behind at the Juventus. Of course, Morata isn't, because Morata is a completely different player and seems to be into a spiral right now, seems to be spiraling. So of course we are relieved. I think you wouldn't have any chances to win Scudetto with Dzeko into the Juventus, but I'm pretty sure and I'm pretty convinced that now you have chances increased, because Juventus is not going to solve some situation and needs that along the way, needs the creativity and the fantasy of the new manager, which is a new manager, completely brand new manager, not for Juventus but for the whole world of football. So let's see, there's a lot of question mark around Juventus right now, as we saw last night in the game against Roma. And I think that Dzeko could just put out some of the question mark from that team. So I'm relieved, yes.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. I know Dzeko had a pretty big miss yesterday, but he definitely, to me, he would have elevated Juve in a way that Morata simply can't. Okay, Fulvio, so let's close on this. As usual, I can't thank you enough. It was great getting your insight on it. So now let's just do a few over-unders for goals and clean sheets for Handanovic. The good news for you is both Lukaku and Lautaro already have a goal under their belt, so we'll have that count for them. So let's start with Lukaku. Had a sensational season last year. He has one goal already for the whole season. This is just Serie A, by the way. I set an over-under of 22.5, so needs another 21.5 goals, needs 22 goals to go over. Do you think he will go over 22.5 total for the season?
Well, it will depend by the quantity of penalties that Inter are able to get, of course, because a lot of these goals, at least 7 or 8 goals, will be scored like that, hopefully. But I'm pretty confident to stay over this case.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Next up, we have Lautaro, who last season had 14. He has one already. I said the over-under at 15.5. So to go over that, he needs 14.5 goals. Do you think he will go over that amount this season?
On that, I will say under. I will say that he's not going to be a great striker. He's probably going to have another utility into the squad. Probably going to serve assists. But more important, I think that Lautaro needs to show this year to be consistent. And I'm not completely sure that he's ready to do that. So this time I will be careful about this, and I will say under. But of course, I mean, I hope I will get wrong at the end of the day.
Sounds good. Yeah, I had him as well around 13, 14. And then we have Alexi Sanchez, who changed the game off the bench in Serie A. If I said the over-under at 6.5, do you think he gets to 7 in Serie A this season, or will he go under 6.5?
I would say over, but it's just a wish to Alexis Sanchez to came out from the injuries that historically had into the last season. If he's able to manage an entire season without any physical major problems, I think he could easily break this this limit. So I would say over.
Okay, last one, Handanovic. Last season led Serie A in clean sheets. Inter had the best defense in the league. Last season got to 13 clean sheets. They definitely didn't get a clean sheet in the first match. If I set the over-under at 11.5, so to go over, they just need to do close to last year, but just under with 12. Do you feel confident they can get to at least 12 clean sheets?
Tricky question. Very tricky question because for the reason that we analyzed into the beginning of this chit chat, and it's about the defense. For the moment, I would say no. I would say that it's not going to be under 11.5, and it's going to be over. Let's hope that Inter managed to do any more goals than the one that. Will compete at the end of the day, but you know, it's just a gut feeling that I have so far. But the mercato is not over, and Inter probably is the team that between all the others is going to fix the defense into the defensive phase, to be honest, into the last 10 days. So this question is nearly impossible to answer right now.
Yeah.
But I think that I would say over.
Okay, awesome. So real fast before I let you go, Fulvio, we saw Juve twice. Do you feel, after you've seen them twice, do you feel better or worse about Inter's chances of winning the Scudetto?
I have good chances. I mean, sorry, not good chances, but I have good expectation this year because I think that Inter is competitive. And I think that Juventus did not solve the problem that they had. Of course, neither Inter did it, but have a group of players that is raising, while I have the feeling that the Juventus have a group of players that is at the last step of the career into that team. So probably when you have the situation, you always have good chances to take over. So I would be, I never hopeful about this, and I tend to hide my expectation to not get disappointed at the end of the season. But this time I'm not going to hide, and I think that Inter is a good competitor, probably more than ever.
I agree. I picked Inter to win the Scudetto on our preview podcast, and based on what I saw from Juve so far, I still feel pretty good about that pick. But Fulvio, I feel great about having you as a guest. You've been fantastic the two times you've come on. Thank you so much. Everyone follow Fulvio, those of you learning Italian, at Santucci Fulvio. Great analysis too if you're into the group stages of the Champions League, Europa League. Fulvio is fantastic at these projections. So thank you so much for hopping on, my friend. It was a real pleasure, and I look forward to talking to you again during the season.
Thank you, David. Thank you, everyone. It was a pleasure. It's been a pleasure to be here. And of course, let's keep in touch.